Welcome to a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrom. How are you doing this week, Seth?
Good.
All right. You're doing good, I'm sure, like I am as a Tesla investor today, because Tesla just released their Q4 delivery and production numbers, and it's looking good, very good. Tesla just confirmed that they delivered 112,000 cars last quarter and produced 105,000 records on both sides here, and especially on the delivery side. It's we knew that Tesla was going for 100,000 miles, the big milestone for a quarter, because that would confirm a rate of deliveries of 400,000 a year, which is quite significant. But 112,000, it's a bit more higher than we thought. But what it did, it's also by exceeding the expectation for this quarter, Tesla was able to met at least the lower end of its own guidance for the year 2019. If you remember, that was before 2019 that they made that prediction of 360,000 to 400,000 cars, and now with this quarter they arrived to 367,000 cars, so just a little bit over the low end of the guidance, but with the production number and the delivery rate being over 400,000 cars a year, they are at a rate that is higher than the higher end of the guidance, which is not the same thing. Of course, the guidance was for delivered vehicles. It's not delivered vehicles, but still encouraging on that front, encouraging going into 2020. Tesla didn't release any kind of guidance for 2020, though, which is, I think, understandable considering how much variables there's at play right now for Tesla. Just like, with the introduction of Model Y, a lot of the deliveries this year is going to depend on how smooth the ramp up of Model Y is going to be. Though I think it's going to be the smoothest for Tesla yet, just based on how many parts it shares the Model 3. The fact that it's also going to be produced on the same production line, that's encouraging. But it's still a big variable.
Yeah, and I think they're not really even sure when the ramp up's going to occur. I mean, obviously there's a few out on the roads right now, but they're really early in the production process or getting the production up to speed. So it's probably kind of hard to guesstimate when exactly they'll start bringing things up. And you'll recall they guessed a little early on the Model 3. I don't think they want to make that mistake again.
Yeah, I think they changed their whole approach of what kind of guidance it is to reach a production level. Elon said clearly that he's not talking when production starts. I mean, production, I think, could start any day right now from Model Y. He's talking about when they reach volume production. And he defined volume production at 1,000 units a week, which is pretty good. And he said mid-year, summer 2020 to reach that from Model Y. So I think that's reasonable. But of course, Tesla wants a much higher production volume than 1,000 a week here for Model Y. They think it's going to be way bigger than Model 3 program. So, so the question is, once they do reach that 1,000 a week, how fast they ramp up to several thousand a week and where they want to be by the end of the year? Cause, Model 3 seems to have stabilized at, well, let's look right here. We haven't done this number yet. I mean, we're doing the podcast in the morning now, and I was surprised that the numbers were released this morning. I was expecting them today, but normally it's after market close.
Right.
Which we could get into some theories of why that was released early then, with what's happening on the markets today regarding Iran. But, okay, so 86,958 divided by 13 weeks. 600 and almost 6,700 here, closer to 7,000 than 6,000 here, on average for the fourth quarter of Model 3 production. Maybe like this, Tesla also in the number, they confirmed that they built 1,000 Model 3s at Gigafactory 3. So that's not just Fremont production at this point.
Right. And that's definitely included in the number.
Yeah.
Yes. We've already produced just under 1,000 customer saleable cars.
Customer saleable. That's a weird way to put it.
Well, I mean, I guess the other, do they consider
Because customers and employees, because they haven't delivered cars to customers yet, right?
Right.
They have only delivered to employees. So, yeah, that's a weird way to put it.
Yeah, I think they have an event on the 7th, according to Reuters.
Yeah.
So, I guess at that point, the customer sales begin. But, you know, up until that point, I think they're just giving cars to employees.
Mm-hmm.
Probably getting some free testing.
And in the Q4 press release, they also said that they demonstrated a production run rate capability of greater than 3,000 units per week. So, of course, Tesla wanted to be at 1,000 per week. And some Tesla executive in China just confirmed last week, or earlier this week, actually, that they were at just over 1,000 a week. So, like, now that they said 3,000, but a production run weight, so that might mean that they demonstrated for, like, an hour or something.
Even a day.
Yeah, or even a day, something like that. But, so, it's not exactly clear.
I guess that's where they hope they can go. Do you think demand is there already for that?
Yeah, well, we can, there was another article they wanted to discuss today that also was announced last night. They did reduce the price of the car now, both right. Reduce the price and now have access to incentive since that they are locally produced. So that's going to have an impact. When Tesla first announced the Made in China Model 3, it was the equivalent of $50,000 US for the standard range plus, which is apparently the only version they are making in Gigafactory 3. And that was still much more expensive than the version in the US, the same car in the US. Now they are talking about $46,000. So that's a good reduction right there. Before incentive, with incentives, it's about $43,000, $299,000 Chinese yen. So it's still more expensive than the version in the US, but it's getting there. And what we looked at when it was back price to $50,000, we looked at the equivalent BMW 3 Series or Mercedes S class in the market, and it was already competitive with that. So that's going to be the biggest competitor there for Tesla. And now with that price reduction, it's starting to be a lot more attractive. So yeah, 3,000 per week. I think it's possible for sure. And then I think also Gigafactory 3 is going to also look into Model Y production relatively soon. If Tesla is starting production soon in Fremont, might want to do that.
Right. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
I think Tesla itself believes that the Model Y will outsell all the other cars combined, which that's some pretty big numbers. I mean, right now that's 100,000 or 112,000 Model Ys per quarter,
mm-hmm.
you know, at today's run rate. That's quite a big boost. And it's true. Like, if you look at the cars on the road today, everything is a crossover or SUV.
And that's true in China, too.
Right. I mean, they're definitely moving in that direction.
Yeah.
There's so much upside. Mm. Like, you know, they're like zero Chinese vehicles or zero Chinese Model 3s were counted, or Chinese built Model 3s were counted in this quarter, this record quarter. And now they're going to be coming off the assembly line at anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 per week, in addition to whatever is coming out of the US. Fremont. So the upside is kind of nutty. Like, when you think about it, like, they could be at 200,000 by the time Model Y is up to production easily.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how you look at the growth in 2020. Like, you look at the way Fremont is right now, where it could be in the near future with the Model Y. Then you add Gigafactory 3 on top. And Tesla is looking for another great year of growth, which brings us to the stock price. So Tesla is again hitting new all-time high today. And right now it's trading about $448 per share, but it blew past $450 for a little while earlier today. And that is especially impressive with the stock market being significantly down this morning due to what happened in Iran, and the chief of the army of the second in command in Iran being killed by what appears to be an American drone strike.
We took credit for, the U.S. took credit.
Well, it's pretty confirmed at this point.
Yeah.
And Iran now. What?
if, you know, Iran has promised retribution, I think really a great thing for them to do to us would be to cut off our oil supply.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing now. So, well, the way the message sounded, like, I don't have the quote in front of me right now, but it sounded like threatening, like to threatening violence since the U.S. did violence to them. Like, it was an attack. Of course, I'm sure the U.S. is justifying with the attacks of the oil tankers that happened in the Gulf.
Yeah, but, and the Saudi drone, they blamed Iran as well, right?
Yeah. So it's they're playing the blame game right now, but it's having real consequences, of course. And so the oil prices were up this morning, but the entire stock market was down, of course, because it's, I mean, some people are already talking about World War III stuff.
It was trending on Twitter this morning.
Yeah. So, but it concretely, what happened is more like the oil prices, because it's the fear of Iran cutting off the supply. So even though the rest of the stock market, including automakers, were down, Tesla was up. But now Tesla was down before the announcement of the Q4 numbers. So I think it was affected like the rest of the market. Maybe not as much as other automakers, because of course, if oil prices are up, it's good for Tesla. It should be. Like, you should be less interested in buying a gasoline car, more interested in buying an electric one. Though at the same time, if it's World War III, you're not buying any cars. So there's pros and cons here on the situation. And of course, it's the least of your problems, buying cars or Tesla stock price if it's World War III. But you, in the context of the show here, of course, we're not trying to be insensitive or anything. But now Tesla reversed pretty quickly with the announcement of those prices. So it is to, like, Tesla could be a way more hot than that if it wasn't for what happened this morning. So, but still, that aside, it's looking very good going forward. And so to support all that growth, though, we there's one thing that's clear. Tesla's going to need to have higher supplies of battery cells here. And in the past, it was always clear where the battery cell would come from. Tesla made the giant deal with Panasonic on Gigafactory 1, and they were talking about ramping that up to 155 gigawatt hour of battery cell production, 150 gigawatt hour of battery pack production. That was the numbers that was announced at the opening of the first phase of the Gigafactory 1. Was 2015? Well, no. Actually, that was when the actually started the cell production in 2016. Anyway, it hasn't been that clear that's a plan since, because we are still so far off from the 105 gigawatt hour of battery cell production. It looked like we were closer to 35 gigawatt hour at this point right now. And Panasonic said that that's what they paid for. Like, they invested $1.6 billion in the factory, and that investment was supposed to bring them up to 35 gigawatt hour of battery production, which they are at now. Now, Tesla's going to be a lot more than that this year with Model Y. And we heard from Panasonic this week that they say they are ready to bump this up to 54 gigawatt hour fairly easily. Now, whether that will require more investment or not, it's not exactly clear, because Tesla has been sort of arguing that they could increase the production capacity on the current equipment they have. And they said they had frozen investment for a while with that into account. But at the same time, now there's also other factors at play. There's like the Gigafactory 3 in China, where Tesla apparently made deals with LG Chem and CATL, which is a Chinese manufacturer of battery cell. And so those batteries are going to come from there. And then there's also I don't even want to call it a possibility right now. It's almost a certainty that Tesla wants to do their own battery cells. But how that will happen is not clear just yet. So, We should learn more in an upcoming event that's supposed to happen early this year. What do you call it? The Battery and Powertrain Investor Day or something like that?
Yeah, when is that?
And last time you said early 2020. So it should be relatively soon. But that's what should make things clear right now. But all this growth is all dependent of having batch cell production. A lot of other automakers that we've seen trying to go big on electric and mass produce electric vehicles have all had issues with battery cell supply. Tesla was the only one that was like making like long range electric cars in high volume and not having any issues. Well, except like early last year when that was a little bit the case, when sort of Model 3 just ramped up a little bit faster than Gigafactory 1, but that wasn't that big of a deal here. But it could be a bigger deal in 2020 with the kind of volume, production volume that Tesla is talking about having, both at Gigafactory 3, which getting cell from LG Chem and CATL, and Gigafactory 1 now supplying Model Y production. Then, I mean, there's Tesla Semi also coming late in the year, and even though they say that that's with limited volume, I mean, just a limited volume of Model Y still has to be some pretty extensive.
The Semi is going to have big battery packs.
So, yeah. I mean, you produce just 100 of them, and it's the equivalent of what, like 1,000 car maybe?
Yeah. So that was kind of my takeaway on the announcement. I was like, 54 from 35, that's not even double. Like, I feel like double would be the very minimum that they would hope to support there. So maybe there are some external sources of batteries coming in somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
So if Tesla already has a deal with LG Chem and CATL in China, they could have a deal to supply like other vehicle program than the ones at the Gigafactory 3. There's that. And of course, the wild card is Tesla's own battery cell production. But
then they could offload some of their, they had already offloaded some of their storage products to other makers. I think Samsung at one point.
Yeah.
I think right now they're getting their storage product batteries from the Gigafactory, but they could always offload it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. But what I'm worried about is if Tesla is counting on their own battery cells, which looks like they might be with some promise that Elon Musk has made about like bringing the 1,000,000-mile battery cell to market next year, not this year. So if they are counting on that volume to be able to grow as fast as they want to do in 2020 and going through 2021 too, there could be problems. Tesla has never manufactured its own battery cell. Of course, they have had great mentors in Panasonic, and they have been very close to those mentors. I mean, they literally own the building where Panasonic is building their cells. So I think that's a clear advantage. But and they have bought companies with experience making battery cell manufacturing equipment. Right.
The Maxell purchase is the big one.
Well, Maxell, that's where I'm like, Maxwell, I'm not sure like just how you, like the Maxwell had their technology for the battery cell chemistry, but they never had any expertise making battery cells. They had expertise making ultra capacitors, which maybe there's some link to it. I'm not knowledgeable enough in that. I'm sure there are some links to like some similarities, but they never really have any battery cell manufacturing experience. Hybar in Canada, they did produce equipment to manufacture battery cells. So that's, I don't think they manufacture them themselves, but if you make the equipment for it, like you're going to need some equipment to build it anyway. So there's some expertise there that's useful.
Also, the Gigafactory hasn't been expanded in a while. Like, you know, the footprint, like it was always expected to be kind of a big rectangle, and it's kind of still that L shape. So I wonder if that's a possibility this year, if they're going to grow that out a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, especially with talking about like the Tesla Semi production too, there was rumors that it could be there. Though I've heard also some rumors that I couldn't confirm, but were kind of believable about Tesla hiring another company to assemble the trucks. Which, there's pros of cons to that rumors and to the credibility of that rumors. Like, it's not like Tesla to do that. Tesla is very vertically integrated. So for them to give that to someone, but at the same time, Tesla's big advantage in electric semi truck is not building a semi truck. It's the powertrain. That's their expertise. It's the electric powertrain. So they could focus on that and let someone else build the frame and body. So I don't know. I'm 50-50 on that, and we'll see. But yes,
any specifics on who was going to build it?
No. Well, there was someone. I was given with the rumor. I was given a name. I cannot remember it right now, but I looked into it and I couldn't find anything that would match. But it was a serious, like, I know that some big name truck manufacturers do some subcontract their body manufacturing and things like that. So it's not completely out of the possibilities, but I don't know. Couldn't confirm it.
Yeah, I mean,
If Tesla builds it, though, Gigafactory 1 would make sense, and then that's where you could build a new section for it.
Right. And we know Tesla and Daimler have a pretty good relationship as far as competing car companies go. So, and Daimler has, what is the company that Daimler owns?
The Freightliner.
Freightliner. So, theoretically, they could build some Tesla semis on that Freightliner lines. Yeah. I don't know.
Though the head of the Freightliner was never really on board with the Tesla semi thing. He had a lot of doubts about it.
Right.
But yeah, so I think we've been talking about that, the Gigafactory 1 not growing for a while, but in Tesla earlier this year said that they don't plan any new investment. They think they can see a lot more efficiency gain with the current footprint that they have there. So I guess that makes sense. The building is still already like massive. It's a massive building.
It is, but like the long-term plan was it for it to be a big rectangle. And like, it doesn't seem like Tesla's out of growth, growth mode. It seems like that is prime real estate. I mean, they have, I think what they're running up against in Reno and the Reno area is employees that are skilled. Because, you know, Reno is a gambling town. I think it's one of the fastest growing places in the US, largely because of Tesla and other technology companies moving in. But I think they're hitting a wall in terms of...
That was Panasonic's problem, too.
Yeah, engineers and skilled labor force that can do battery pack assembly and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Panasonic said in that comment that they see a move to 54 gigawatt hour quite doable. They did mention that while they see that now is that they have fixed their labor situation in Gigafactory 1. They say they have now 3,000 people working at the factory and 200,000 technical assistants that they bring from Japan to assist and make sure things are going. So at first, apparently, there were a lot of people from Japan running things, and now the number has stabilized to a higher number of permanent employees from Nevada versus still a significant group from Japan, like 200 technical assistants. Significant, but out of 3,000 employees, it's a small minority at this point. But yeah, Tesla has the same problem in a bigger scale because I think they have a lot more employees than 3,000, and I think they are closer to 7,000 at Gigafactory 1. So. I mean, it's not a diss on Nevada either. Like, it's hard to find 7,000 qualified employees anywhere in the world. So, it just happened in the desert next to Reno. It's also very difficult.
Yeah, and Reno is not a big town to begin with.
Like, yeah.
What's
their tagline? It's the
biggest little city in America or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Now it's the biggest big city here. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going
fast. Littlest big city.
But yeah, I mean, there. So what we're getting at really is that there's still a lot of question about Tesla's growth for the next year. It's clearly growing fast. It's just that a lot of things need to come into places for them to keep that going. But a lot of people see that happening, and that's why the stock is skyrocketing right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely big opportunities there, and that's why the stock is heading up so sharply.
Yeah. So there's still a lot to keep an eye on, but things are looking good on the greater scheme. But we reported on Elon sending out an email to employees earlier this week or this week last weekend, where he was like, "Don't look at the stock price too much." he said, "Well, first of all, and I mean, in the context of that, he said my silly jokes on Twitter are just that jokes." What really matters is our actual execution and effectiveness as a company. So I think if we go back at previous comments that Elon made, going back to when he was talking about taking Tesla private, he said that it was a distraction within the office. People were always talking about the stock prices. Of course, they all have stock options, so part of their compensation is based on Tesla stock performance. So it became a big thing in the office, and Elon thought it was distracting. And now this week, last week when the stock hit 420 a share, Elon tweeted, "Wow, the stock is so high, lol." So, of course, it was a reference at 420 and in its significance in the pot cannabis culture. But if you don't know that, or look past that, if the CEO saying that the stock is high, his own stock is high, is not a good look.
No, not a good look at all.
And Elon has done that in the past in a serious way, where he's like, "Yeah, I feel like the stock is too high right now," and the shareholders are like, "What the hell?" But now this time he said he specified that it was a joke to reassure employees, I assume. But then he was like, also telling them that they should focus on execution and not the stock price. So I assume that with the stock going very high and people getting their options, it became again a big subject of conversation, and Elon wanted to shut it down. It also maybe convinced people not to sell their options, or at least just sell the minimum to pay your taxes on it and not and keep the rest, so that there's not a sell-off from Tesla employees receiving a stock option. Because he did say in the same email that we obtained, "Ultimately, I think Tesla would be worth considerably more than it is today." So that's a safe statement to make. Like, he's not making any bold prediction here, other than it will still go up. But there's a constant debate as to whether that means the value should be higher now or later. That's how the stock market works. He continues, "That is the unfortunate consequence of being a publicly traded company. So it goes. Heads down execution is right now the things to focus on." So he's basically saying them, stop talking about the stock price and do your work.
Meanwhile, I'll be making jokes about it on Twitter.
Yeah, that too.
Some ambiguous jokes about it.
To be fair, that was December 2028. So there was this 3 days left to Tesla to deliver cars, and they were like on their path to try to deliver every car in inventory, which I don't think they really managed technically. If you look at how many cars were in inventory last quarter versus what they delivered, even though like they produced 104,000 cars, they delivered 112,000. So right there is closer to 105, so like 7,000 cars more than they produce. But I think the inventory was closer to like 15 or something last quarter, if I remember.
So you think they'll hit 100 in Q1?
That's hard to tell. I mean, I assume that's very possible with China. Like, China's going to be, could be a 20,000 car quarter, something like that, closer to that, I think. That would help a lot. But then it's, I think by far the biggest contributor this quarter was the U.S. And so it's going to be how far the U.S. falls on that line. But I mean, at the same time, the U.S. might get some Model Y deliveries. I don't think they would get that much in Q1, but maybe 1,000 or two would be nice. If they start delivering like next month, like slowly deliveries, like a few hundred cars and so on, I think that's a real possibility. So yeah. The big one was the contributor too was in the Netherlands. We talked about this week on Electric. Right. 30,000 cars, I think, this year they contributed, which was big for the small country. 17,000 cars, I think, in Q4, and just 12,000 cars alone last month. So that was insane. But of course, that was all because of a reduced incentive for electric vehicles. But that's the thing, though. The reduced incentive didn't reduce that much. Yeah, I think it was like four. They were paying only 4% tax on the company vehicles. It was just from company vehicles, too, not for customers' vehicles. But obviously, had a big impact. Like, a lot of people can.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's a thing there. Like, everybody has. It's like health insurance here is tied to your company. Mm-hmm. It sounds like cars are tied to your company a lot more in the Netherlands.
Yeah. also in Europe, like a lot less, fewer people have cars started with. So if you have one, sometimes like it's a perk. But yeah, so it went for like 4% to getting up to 8%. So that many people bought the cars not to pay the 4% more taxes on them. So that's a big impact it had. But then next year, it's going up too. Similarly, in the similar thing. So I think it's, it might have also a big impact this year on Tesla delivery. So just not in Q1, because with all that volume that came in Q4, it's a lot of people that are not looking for cars right now in Q1. But at the same time, it's going to help with Tesla's the viral marketing that they have with the more cars they are on the road, the more people talk about them. And word of mouth.
That is what is kind of offsetting the reduced taxes or the tax incentives. Because, you know, theoretically, Tesla should be losing numbers because of its reduced amount of rebate tax in the US, but it hasn't. It has kept steady. And I think it will continue to pretty much keep steady, even without the federal tax.
I wouldn't call it keep steady though. I think Tesla delivered fewer cars in the U.S. Last quarter than it did in Q4 2018.
Yeah, but they're gonna have the Model Y, and you know, there's gonna.
Yeah, be some... well, okay, yeah. If you, but yeah, yeah, in that.
But sense, yeah. But without they're not gonna have any tax incentives this year, and without tax incentives, electric car demand has plummeted wherever it gets taken away to almost nothing, like Hong Kong or Denmark. And that hasn't happened to Tesla in the US. Hopefully it doesn't happen this quarter. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing to look out for, because like, look what has happened to the Chevy Bolt.
Yeah. I mean,
it wasn't selling incredibly well to begin with, but like now it's really, Chevy's pretty much abandoned it.
Yeah.
So, I think without that incentive, electric car manufacturers are usually in tough shape. Tesla's kind of weathered the reduction, and it'll be interesting to see how they do without any federal tax credits. And we'll see starting in Q1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be especially interesting compared to the sales of similar vehicles, electric vehicles. Who do have access to those federal tax credits. I mean, the Model 3, I think, is an interesting position where there's not like the mid-sized sedan, premium mid-sized sedan that's comparable to Model 3, really. Like there's no like a BMW 3 Series electric. Like the BMW i3 is not a Model 3 competitor. Like, but the Model Y that's coming up, the Model Y would never have access to federal tax credit in the U.S. since it's launching this year, and the Model Y I think is going to have a little bit more competition than.
That's true. I mean, the Jaguar I-Pace comes to mind.
The Mustang, Nike. Yeah.
Absolutely. Although the Mustang is going to be reduced numbers, it's not even going to start really getting delivered.
Yeah, you're right, because the Mustang is going to start probably later than the Model Y deliveries, and then they're going to focus on their first edition cars, which are going to be more expensive. But the Model Y is also going to be more expensive at first. I think they are going with the more expensive version this time.
Right.
So yeah, going to be interesting. Then there's like a smaller Mercedes, like a smaller version of the EQC coming. There's a smaller version of the Audi is also like Q4 type of SUV, electric SUVs, but when
EQC are those? Isn't huge. Like it's almost Model Y size already.
Yeah, if you look at the cargo space, the EQC might be a competitor, but the IQC is also pretty expensive. Then if you look like the Audi, like the new Audi that's coming out, that's sort of that. Like we don't know when they are launching things now in the US versus Europe, because they're so focused on Europe now in 2020 right. Because of
everybody's focused on Europe.
Yeah.
We're missing out on a lot of stuff because of that.
Yeah, so probably Tesla is going to be okay because of that too, where they produce the Model Y especially for the U.S. this year, and there's not that going to be that much new competition in electric space this year in the U.S. There's going to be some, but just not that much. While in Europe, it's going to be crazy. But then in Tesla is going to come up in Europe, the Model Y, the year after that, probably, or is it late 2021 that they think the, because they're starting with the Model Y at Gigafactory 4. So I was thinking that maybe like Tesla doesn't even produce the Model Y for Europe from the Fremont. Maybe that it's going to depend on the timing, of course, of how fast they can bring up Gigafactory 4.
Right.
Maybe there's going to be some shipment of Model Ys to Europe, but it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. That's going to have a big impact.
I mean, you have to give it to Tesla. Like, they are, you know, they picked Germany. They picked Berlin. Like, they're going right at the German automakers here. Like, they're going to build their Model Y in Germany to sell in Germany. Kind of impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could have picked, like, you know, Spain or France or whatever. Probably got a lower cost. Like, building in Greater Berlin is probably not the cheapest land or the cheapest workforce. So that to me was kind of impressive.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on, Supercharger Network got new maps this week. Tesla is showing some expansions of the network. Elon did mention recently that, or you confirm a suspicion that why the Supercharger Network didn't grow that much in 2018, 2019 was because they were waiting for the Supercharger V3 to expand faster, which makes sense. Of course, you want the latest technology to be deployed. Though right now, if you look at the deployment, it's still like they're still deploying some V2. So there's some V3, but it's clearly starting to V3 taking over. But Elon did mention that they still need to ramp up V3 production. So that explains why it's still not at the rate where Tesla wants to be. But if you look at the 2020 map, it's, again, an extremely ambitious map in terms of expansion. But we've seen that before and Tesla not delivering on them. But if you look in the last few weeks, it was actually like some impressive deployment. Just the Trans-Canadian Supercharger Network, that was like, I don't know, like 20 new stations that came online in the same week or something like that. And most of them, if not all of them, were V3. So that's a big addition to the V3 superchargers right there.
Also, I'm not sure if we noticed, but that coincided with that petrol company that does superchargers doing their Trans-Canadian.
Yeah, Suncor, they do the Petro-Canada.
Yeah, Petro-Canada. They have their own Trans-Canada CCS combo thing going on.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of one of the motivations to make it happen so quickly.
Yeah, to see who's going to make it first. Of course, there's some argument that Tesla didn't really do it because they're not like St. John's to Labrador's and things like in the maritime provinces. But Tesla, at the same time, they want to do like enable like coast to coast travel in Canada. But, they have to also deploy supercharger where they have customers, and I'm sure they don't have that many customers in Terre-Neuve and Labrador.
Speaking of that, looking at the North American map, I'm really surprised they don't have superchargers going down Baja California.
I was thinking the same thing, because they did add some supercharger in Mexico.
Right.
And
quite a few around Mexico City.
Very focused on the route from, if you're going from Texas, from El Paso, and you're going down on the eastern coast, well, not even the coast, really, like
central, yeah.
Yeah, central toward Mexico City. You can already do the trip, and now they're gonna add a bunch of supercharger to that trip to make it even easier. So, I don't know, maybe a lot of people do that. I'm not aware at all, but I was thinking too that so Tesla has so many owners in California, and I know that it's popular there to drive down to Mexico. To Baja California and to the coast, and they have some great resorts there and whatnot. Some great fishing there.
Yep.
So, but yeah, you're right. There's no supercharger at all there. Like it's San Diego, and then it dies.
I feel like they could get by with like maybe three, just like spread them out. I mean, there's one highway, so it's not like they gotta figure it out. But maybe there's some electrical infrastructure problems there. Or I know there's been some kidnappings there, but I don't think that's a big problem, especially in Baja. I mean, it's basically just desert. Like, there's not much going on. And I kind of, it looks like there's one, if I squint, I probably find this out, but it looks like there's one in Tijuana or Rosarito kind of area.
I'm not sure. That might be an illusion from there. We can check the map, but I don't remember it being one there. It might just be the way that it shows on the when you zoom out. But yeah, there's still a bunch of addition in the U.S. In Canada. In Quebec, we have a few new ones. You're going to be able to drive all the way to Gaspésie. So Gaspésie is like the end of the southern Quebec. Like if you follow the St. Lawrence River, goes into the sea and into the ocean. And that's Gaspésie there. It's a popular road trip in Quebec. So now it sounds like, all right. So I just zoomed in and now there's nothing in Tijuana. It stops right. No,
there's one in Ensenada.
Oh, okay. Sorry. The destination charger are hiding anything. Yeah, you're right. Ensenada.
Which is also a great town. Nice fishing village.
Oh yeah.
So that gets you like, about a third of the way down. And then I guess your destination charger is the rest of the way.
Yeah, you're right. You could just put a few of them and can get all the way to La Paz. Yeah. So yeah, Gaspésie is getting a few. Canada is getting a lot of new ones, and it makes sense with the 5,000 credit that came, and then you have BC that has some money on top of it, and Quebec has 8,000 on top of it. So Tesla's sales are still strong here, and it encouraged them to, of course, deploying more infrastructure. What I would like in Quebec is another service center. That would make sense by now with the fleet growing. We still only have Montreal and Quebec City. There's a fleet of mobile technicians, and I dealt with them a few times, and they've been really useful, but I'm sure Tesla could use like another service center for like the harder stuff too.
I think what's kind of interesting, for my uses, I was looking around my area, but like looking at Los Angeles, the Bay Area, a couple of these metro areas that are very Tesla dense, we're starting to see, it's not gas station density, but we're starting to see, we're starting to see something like, for me, I was looking at the route from New York City to Washington, D.C. It looks like there's going to be a supercharger at just about every exit or every like two or three exits. And certainly enough to kind of rival gas in terms of convenience. I mean, there's probably a gas station at almost every exit. But do you really need every exit? I don't know if that's true or not, but that's where we're at now. So it's pretty impressive that Tesla's done this.
They're doing it really based on the density of owners they have there. Because if you look at Los Angeles, which I think is their biggest market in the world, biggest city.
Probably.
Looks like they plan to double the number of supercharger stations in the greater Los Angeles in 2020. If I'm looking at that now, I mean, just between the airport and Santa Monica, it's going to be four new stations. Four new stations. You're going to get two right next to the airport, one in Marina del Rey, one in Venice.
Yeah, I mean, they're adding four to San Francisco, another two in South San Francisco, another in San Mateo. Like, it's just the whole way down from San Francisco to San Jose is like,
I'm looking at the specific location, though. They all make sense. There's one in the Pacific Palisade right now, and it looks like it's like at a house, like a residential, like right in the middle of the residential area.
Maybe that's Elon's house.
No, I think it's in Bel Air, but it's still like it's not near like one of the main roads to like go to Malibu or anything like that. So, but you have to assume that the number of new station is like the specific location, maybe not, but the number of look at the one in Marina del Rey. It's like literally in the marina. It's not like on the road. It's
in the marina. That is a weird place. It is in a, I was looking at the Palisades one. Like where this thing is dropped is actually a residential neighborhood.
Yeah. Makes no sense. But yeah, so, all right, let's say that the number of stations are good, even if the locations are not. it's still doubling the number of stations, and it's doubling them with Supercharger V3 too, which is double the capacity of a V2. So you're more than doubling the capacity of the network. So that's what's important, is how fast can you charge a car? How many cars can you handle an hour? And but maybe some of them is going to be your urban superchargers too. That would right. make a big difference, because we're talking about them in the cities, and they're not all like located where it makes sense for like a road trip, like going long distance. It's like one in the middle of Long Beach there. Like you don't drive through that to go somewhere. Normally, like if you go to San Diego, you're not that close to the five or things like that.
Yeah, there's some new ones right in the middle of Huntington Beach and right in the middle of Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Jamie will be happy about that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Some new ones too for making the trip to San Francisco through the not the five, but what's the other big one?
The San Francisco, the 101.
Yeah, there's three there, three more. Oh, there's new ones on the five too. Because I mean, that's two of their biggest markets, the Bay Area and Los Angeles. You want a lot of them between the two. But of course, it's not too surprising that California is getting a lot of new stations. If you go through Europe, there's some interesting new ones in Europe, like the bunch of highlands in the Mediterranean Sea is getting like a course is getting one. Sardinia is getting two. Sardinia.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many. Tesla owners, there's on there, but it's a small island too, so you barely need a supercharger, but they're getting two of them apparently.
Yeah, and surprising. Even Palma's getting one.
Palma's getting one, which also, like, pretty sure you don't need that to go around. No. But
Ibiza doesn't have one, that's sad.
Well, Ibiza, you can walk the whole island, so like, it's not. Don't really need one. You get a few in Sicily too. Sicily is connected. Is it connected?
No,
it's not connected. Is that even a bridge or something?
They're talking about building a bridge, but it's kind of deep channely water there. They can't do a bridge or a tunnel. But I imagine at some point in the future it will be connected.
Yeah, but they're getting two supercharger on the island itself. So
yeah,
I'm sure there's a ferry or something.
Yep.
Yeah, so you can get your car there.
And then Eastern Europe is kind of blowing up.
Yeah, that's where things get crazy. So all the way to Ukraine, all the way to Russia. Though there was already some planned expansion in Russia. Estonia, Latvia, they're all getting supercharger station. Then the south, through to like to Greece, big expansion in Greece, which still doesn't have a car, all the way to Serbia. Turkey, massive expansion in Turkey, in the West Turkey, like we're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 new station in Turkey. 7 new station in Turkey.
Kind of surprised not to see any in Israel. There's a couple in Jordan.
No, there's a new one. It's in Jordan. You're right.
Tesla is supposedly opening Israeli operations soon, so maybe that'll change.
Yeah,
I mean, it's such a small place. It's like these other things. You don't really need superchargers. Yeah.
And it's not like you're going to... You know, travel to Egypt, much.
No, you're not leaving.
Syria, Lebanon.
I don't even know if you can drive out of there.
Yeah, Lebanon. Maybe Carlos Ghosn could drive a Tesla now. Probably not driving in Nissan these days.
Maybe he's in that trunk driving around.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the former CEO of Nissan, Carlos Ghosn, is in Lebanon now. He's escaped authorities in Japan, and he's hanging out in Lebanon after escaping through Turkey, I think.
Through Turkey, yep.
Yeah.
Interpol's after him.
Yeah.
The pilots are in trouble in Turkey. It's quite a story.
Yeah. If those remember him from the Revenge of the Electric Car day, like he was a popular guy in the electric vehicle community for a while, but then it died down pretty quick in the last few years because he didn't push much at Nissan and Renault to do anything else than the Leaf and the Zoe. But then there was a whole debacle in Japan with misappropriation of funds, apparently.
which sounded a little ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Like it seemed like all those things felt like things that could have been that, you know, trumped up or not. I don't know.
He's denying everything. He's saying that it was all a conspiracy to get him out of there, that he didn't like how he was letting Nissan slip into the hands of the French and Renault. Because something weird happened where he stepped down from the CEO of Nissan and he became head of Renault instead. And he was the one pushing for the Renault and Nissan alliance. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not out of question that there was a conspiracy there, but I don't know. I wouldn't get it past Carlos, too.
Yeah, it seemed a little shady to begin with. But, you know, he did turn around Renault and Nissan.
There's not so much new things. If you look at our friends in Australia, it's not. That's like Melbourne is getting.
Yeah, they don't have the cross Australia one, although maybe the fires there will kind of boost demand. There is another one in Perth on the west side.
Yeah, but is there really anyone doing the drive like from Perth to Adelaide to Melbourne? Like Adelaide to Melbourne, Melbourne to Sydney, Sydney to Brisbane, that I'll get. But from Perth to Adelaide, that's like, I don't know how long this is, but it has to be a drive.
Yeah.
Crazy drive.
It's like crossing the U.S. or Canada.
Yeah, probably similar.
Same kind of thing.
But like the U.S., I get a little bit. Like the U.S., there's a ton of things between, like, there's a big part of Texas that's pretty long, but like there's cities to visit on the way and everything. This is a long drive with nothing to do. And I mean, same thing in Canada. I know that two guys set out to as soon as the supercharger, Trans-Canadian supercharger went online, I think two guys set out to try to do the trip and they abandoned it apparently halfway through Northern Ontario, which has nothing there. And they run into some issues also in the other supercharger there in Northern Ontario where there was some snowstorms. And it's not Tesla's fault in any way, but Tesla hired people to plow the snow on a snowstorm. But in those places where everything is so remote, like Northern Ontario, it can get a while for your contractor to get there and plow the snow. So the cars were stuck in the snow for a while at the supercharger station and everything. And it slowed them down so much that I think they had to go back because they had some obligation back in BC. They went from BC to Eastern Canada. So apparently no one did the trip yet.
That's weird. I feel like some family would have done it. Yeah. Like,
People don't do that much.
I took my family to Minneapolis, when there was only like you had to stop at every supercharger.
But here's the thing: people would in Canada if they want to go to the other side, they would go to Minneapolis to go to. Right. That's the thing. The route doesn't make sense. I mean, now it does make sense if you're doing it in the Tesla because there's like the North Dakota. Is not covered yet. They're apparently doing it. Like Northern Montana and North Dakota is not covered. But normally you would go through Minneapolis, North Dakota, Montana, and then I don't know when I think probably all the way to Seattle you start going up. So you would go through the entire U.S. If you want to go from Montreal to Vancouver, the fastest route in the gas-powered cars is through the Northern U.S. and then you flip up to Canada through Vancouver, to Seattle to Vancouver. So you're already making longer going through staying in Canada and going to Northern Ontario. And then once you pass Winnipeg, there's like nothing right. All the way to Sudbury. I mean, there's Thunder Bay, but even then Thunder Bay.
Well, somebody will do it in the summertime, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's going to be much easier in the summertime for sure. But they're going to do it again just to say they do it.
Right.
At the same time, it's still useful, not just for like doing the whole trip, but of course, like now you could go from Winnipeg to Regina to Calgary, like very very easy, like that's doable. You could do Winnipeg to Toronto if you want. It's such a crazy trip still.
I mean, something that also to consider is like Tesla is going to be selling these semis in a little while. And not every semi is going to be able to stop at, a mega charger or whatever, which there hasn't been one built yet that we know about. So, like, having these kind of remote area superchargers will be a kind of a, not the best case scenario. It'll probably take a few hours to charge. but it'll be a way for these trucks to make it cross country. So I think
that's true. And if you look, what the Mega Charger is looking like right now is actually just several supercharger plugs and the same thing. So that's
right.
what a supercharger looks like, a Mega Charger looks like right now. So yeah, technically trucks could charge there. It's just that it might be an issue in terms of like
parking.
But at the same time, it looks like they could because they plug several one of them. They have their own extension. They have like their supercharger extension that they deploy.
Right.
So they could park a little bit further and like let's say like use four supercharger station.
Or then, I mean, when you think about the V3s, like maybe you only need two or three of those.
Yeah. Well, four is going to be a megawatt. I think it's a megawatt. The Mega Charger right. is supposed to be a megawatt. That's where it's called. But if I look at them, even the one like the remote one, we're talking all about at least six supercharger V3. Yeah, they're all six. So you could use four of them. You have near megawatt, and you leave two for. I think two is going to be enough for most people that are doing the trip if they don't stay there long. That 1 megawatt, you don't stay there long.
No.
You move on pretty quick. So, yeah, that's a real possibility.
You're not going to be making friends, though, if you're taking out four V3s on a busy weekend.
Yeah, that's true. But, again, I doubt that's going to be a big problem in the near future.
Right.
Let's just be happy that the network is up right now. I've never gone somewhere. Yeah, I've been Tesla owners for over 2 years now. I've never been anywhere where I'm like, oh, I wish I had a supercharger there now. Like, it's never been a question where I need a supercharger anywhere, though. And of course, it's different from some. I assume some people it was the case, but it's becoming less and less of an occurrence at this point.
You know, I, my own personal problem. We go snowboarding in southern Vermont. I think a Bennington, if anybody in Tesla is listening, Bennington, Vermont supercharger would be just perfect.
Bennington.
It's like 2/3 of the way up for us. Our Model X isn't getting the great range that it used to get. So we get up there without a problem, but it would be nice to have a little bit of extra.
That's on which highway?
It's on a small highway. That's the problem. It's on the 7, which goes from Albany to Manchester. So it's not a big highway, but it's in the middle of, there's like a big, like if you look at the map, it's a big kind of.
Okay, I see it, Bennington. Yeah, there's one that's going to be built in Rutland.
Yeah, that's too far away. It's north. Yeah, but it's it's not bad. Like we stop at Clinton Corners on the Taconic on the way up, and then sometimes we'll stop similar on the way down.
Well, one in Bennington could make sense for people between Albany. And like on the 9th, because it would cover the 7th and the 9th too. So
yeah,
that could make sense. You know, you can do that. And for anyone listening too, you can go on Tesla's website on the supercharger page and request like or suggest a supercharger location. I think you can go all the way to like suggesting a specific location if you know like a property owner that would be interested in hosting a supercharger. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind if you have a spin. And if you see Tesla looking at a location, like if you go on the map and you see one of those gray spot and you know someone that would be willing to go there, that I would suggest too, because like we just said about the Palisade and Marina del Rey, it looks like a few of them is just ideas that Tesla would want a supercharger there based on their data in the region, but I doubt they have a specific location in mind just yet. Otherwise, they would put it not in the residential area or something like that.
Yeah, actually, the director of our mountain, which is Bromley, just outside of Manchester, said that they were pretty far along with Tesla in putting a supercharger at the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But the demand charges from green energy power were too high.
That's weird, because what do you call them? You're not Green Mountain Green Power?
Green Mountain Power.
Yeah, that's the Tesla partner for the Powerwalls and everything.
Yeah. I think it's just getting the power to them because we have the high spikes in the middle of the day. I think they just don't have the capacity right there to.
So we need to put the Powerwall there too. On the
fuel. Yeah, I mean they could put in a bunch of power packs and charge those all night and charge cars all day or power the lifts at the mountain or whatever.
Lastly, We're going to, you're going to Vegas next week, well, this weekend for next week's CES. I'm going to Vegas, but the next weekend after that, or the one after that, not for CES, for the things, but that means that you're going to see a lot of CES coverage from us. We're going to have Mikey there that's going to cover the personal electric vehicles. Seth, you're going there with Nissan. Do you have any idea what they're going to show there?
I think we're going to see their SUV.
The little SUV, electric SUV?
Yeah.
The next electric vehicle after the
all-wheel drive, Leaf kind of thing.
Apparently, it's going to be a little bit more pleasing on the eye than the Leaf. So.
Which is a very low bar, but...
So, yeah. Look out for that. And also, if you want to follow the other coverage from our other sites, 95 Mag, 95 Google, 95 Toys, they're going to have plenty to report on the coolest stuff coming out of CES that's not related to electric vehicles. And with our yearly trip at CES, sometimes it's getting difficult there with the convention center so big, getting 200,000 people on the weekend there. It's hard to move around. But Elon Musk has a solution with the Boring Company. We reported last year that they won a contract there, a $50 million contract to build a people mover. The convention center is calling it a people mover. The Boring Company is calling it the Loop, their loop that they're building there. We posted on Electrek. You can see them, the construction going on live there. It's under construction. They have lowered the boring machine in there. And Elon now is confident that it's going to be fully operational later this year. So it's going to be ready for the 2021 CES.
What's your over-under on that happening? Do you think it's going to happen or no?
I think it's going to happen. I'm pretty confident it's going to happen. Because it's not that much bigger than the one in LA. Like it's only for the convention center, which is a mile long or something like that. I mean, a mile long tunnel is a big deal. It's not easy to do, but they already proved that they can do it. And now they just... what I find most interesting about this project, obviously it looks like it's going to be the first commercial product of a Boring Company loop, because the one in LA is just not a commercial project. It's a test one. So that's interesting itself. But then that means that what kind of vehicle they're going to use to move people around in there. It's going to be electric, that's for sure. But is it going to be like the Model X thing that they unveiled in 2018 to move into the tunnel? Or is it going to be another vehicle that's going to be like higher capacity? And they are talking about that on their website, about a Model X base vehicle, but with a higher capacity. So it'd be interesting if Tesla is coming out with something like that.
That to me seems insane. Why don't they just put a train in there? Like a subway train or whatever. I mean, obviously they can do a lot of improvements on that thing,
mm-hmm.
but like a small vehicle makes no sense to me unless they're going to run one like every, 30 seconds.
Well, that's what they're going to do. They're going to run one pretty fast. It's going to be automated. Like it should be easier to have them like one after the other pretty fast. But I think why they wanted to do something like that with fewer capacity per vehicle is they want to expand on it. And I think now they're working with Las Vegas and looking, okay, can we expand this to the strip? Can we expand it to the airport? Can we expand it to whatever? And then it starts to make sense. If you have more location, there's going to be like three or four, I think, stations within the convention center. The convention center is expanding to 2021. You're going to have a big new section of it.
Yeah.
The new exhibition hall that's, I think, bigger than I think it increased by almost 50% the space of the commission,
which is crazy because like the last thing that people want for CES is for it to be bigger.
Well, so. If it's bigger, you could have like more exhibitors or bigger booth per exhibitor. But it doesn't mean there's going to be more people there if they're not that like because it gets busy at CES. It's the people, like even though it's huge, there's so many people there at the same time that you cannot move. So if there's more space, but like just like the same amount of people, just a little bit more people, maybe it's going to be easier to move around there. But yeah, then if you have more spot, like to stop at, like you put like five or six of them on the strip, you put one at the airport, you put one of, I don't know, like, maybe at just outside of Vegas, where people can park and get into Vegas without going into with their cars or something like that. There's some idea there. Then it makes sense to have like fewer people per car and go directly to your destination, end destination without having to do too many stops. That would make sense. So I think Tesla is really working on that. But I doubt Las Vegas is going to approve anything until they can prove that it works well at the convention center. It was really the perfect project for Tesla because like the convention center was a lot less people to convince. I mean, convention center already had a massive construction project there. They just added this construction project to there. And that was it, $50 million. Looks cheap to $50 million for a 1 mile long tunnel with three stations to get in and out of them.
I wonder if they're going to sell bricks.
I think the boring company is going to lose money on that short term. But if it works, then they're going to have a ton of them in for similar projects, I think. So,
yeah.
Probably worth it. Anyway. Stay on the lookout for CES coverage this week. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. You can give us a thumbs up. Give us a subscribe. You can give us a review on your podcast app. That's always appreciated. And we're going to see you not same time, same place. Yeah, we almost forgot we have an announcement. Sorry about that for people who got used to the noon, 9 time, Nescos or whatever you're using, where you're located. Are we moving back to an Eastern time of 4 p.m.? That's going to be 1 p.m. West Coast time because I'm going to be on the West Coast for a while. So it's going to be easier to meet it for me than 9 in the morning since I have to write some articles to talk about it on the podcast. Need things to talk about. So we're going to do that. So sorry if it's an inconvenience for you guys, but it's going to be pretty steady for that for a while and then we'll revisit depending on where Seth and I are in the world. All right. See you next time.